You're listening to Sports Connections with David Smale, the show that brings you a fun and intimate look into connections throughout sports. Now here's your host, David Smale.
On the night of December 7, 2013, Sporting Kansas City and Real Salt Lake squared off for the MLS Cup to decide the championship for the 2013 season. It was the coldest match in MLS history, with a game time temperature of 20 degrees, and that was before the sun went down. Before the night was over, the two clubs had completed the longest penalty kick shootout in MLS history, and Sporting KC had won its second MLS Cup. Jimmy, welcome to Sports Connections.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, we don't normally do a whole segment on one game, but that game was so good that we're going to break our own rule. So first of all, what is your most vivid memory of that night? Is it the cold, the never-ending PKs, or is it something else?
I think you're spot on. That game deserves a whole show. You could write a book about that game. There's so many things in that game that you'll never forget. But when I do get asked the question, what do I remember about that night? And it's not us winning the trophy. It was me being freezing cold with another 22,000 people, because it was insane how cold that was. And I'm coming from a pretty cold country where it gets pretty cold. And I don't mind the cold, but that night was one of the coldest nights I've ever experienced in my life. And it was so cold that the heating system in one half of the field couldn't keep up with it. So it was like playing on concrete. And I think if that has been a regular game, it would have been called off because it was dangerous.
Right.
It was like playing on concrete. And but long game, make that short, we won. And it became a night that we'll never, ever forget. You know, have that turned out differently, it will be a night we don't want to think about.
Yeah, for but sure. Was it hard for you to move with it that cold?
It was hard for me to move also because I struggled with broken ribs. And that's why I'm keep whining about that heating system couldn't catch up with the cold. Because imagine diving around on concrete with two broken ribs. That was not funny.
No, not at all.
And I had to warm up in that end before the game. And if I remember correct, I maximum warmed up for 15 minutes and then I walked back into the locker room, not to do any extra damage.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Now, when you're thinking about the game itself, do you think more about how close RSL came to scoring on multiple occasions or the opportunities that came this close but just missed for Sporting?
No, I think the way the system is here in America with playoffs and everything, it's not enough to be good to win a championship. You also have to be a little bit lucky. And let's be honest, we got a little bit lucky in that game. But in the end of the day, I also thought we deserved that luck. We have worked extremely hard, not only in that game, in a whole season. I think one of the things that you can recognize that team from was its work rate. I mean, I don't recall when I think back that we had left the games with not giving everything we had. You know, the identity of the team and the culture in the team was, we were all in every single game. We gave everything we had. Sometimes that was not enough, but that wouldn't take us down because we knew we gave everything we had and then we'll just bounce back. And that's why I think consistently we were so good for a couple of years.
There's an expression that's very popular. Luck is the residue of design. Some would say, yeah, Sporting was lucky that those two shots in the second half hit the crossbar or the upright, I guess. But yet, if they had been a foot inside, maybe you would have gotten a hand on it, or a defender would have gotten a hand on it. So it wasn't, you weren't strictly lucky. You guys were in the right position. And then a couple of times when they took advantage of an opportunity, then the wood was your 12th teammate.
Yes. And sometimes you need that. And as I said before, to win a championship in a playoff system like it is here, you need to have that little bit of luck when you need it. And we honestly had that in that specific game.
Yeah, I've got to talk about the PKs. And what were you thinking when Aurelien Collins stepped to the spot in the 10th round of PKs, knowing that you'd be up next if the match remained tied after that?
Here's a funny story. I actually got pretty pissed that he's up shooting the next one because I wanted to shoot. Aurelien Collins, and I love Aurelien Collins. He's still a good friend of mine. I still in contact with him and speak with him. But he was so bad in taking penalties in the practice leading up to that final. I'm not kidding you. If he had 15 PKs during those 2 weeks, he had missed 13 of them. So bad. So I actually were screaming and yelling to the coaches that I wanted to take the next PK. But Aurelien Collins came so far up in the field that I didn't want to make any drama or get in his head, you know. There's enough on the line. And it turned out, in my opinion, he had the best PK in the entire penalty shootout. Absolutely had off. Deep respect for how he placed that ball in that moment. That was top, top, top class.
Yeah, and you had a really good view because it's unlike a lot of overtime scenarios in other sports. The keepers basically stand just away from the goal, from the mouth of the goal, watching.
Yeah.
And so you had a really good vantage point of that.
It was incredible PK by him.
What was your thought process after he had scored that when Palmer stepped to the line to try and tie it?
Well, we had that, we're in that opportunity a little bit early in the game too, where we scored and we had the chances. If they missed, we would win. But I had the same approach like every other PK I was going into. I've only met one other person who could do the same thing, but I actually have a bottom inside my head. I can switch on and off and shut everything out. And honestly, it was just me and the shooter in that stadium. Everything else were not there. And I had the same approach when Palmer, he went up and hit the crossbar. And I'll be honest with you, it took me a second to realize that we had won. Because earlier on in the penalty shootout, they had one PK that hit the inside of the post and it went in. And I'll be honest with you, I heard the ball hit the post, but it was a little bit behind me. And I thought it went out and I thought we had won there, but it went in the goal. So I had to double check that we were champions.
And just describe your emotion when you looked and that ball's bouncing away from the goal and you realize that you had just won the MLS Cup.
Relief, excitement, happiness. I think we have worked so hard for that, not only as a team, but we wanted to give the city so badly a trophy they deserve. We had an amazing support at that stadium since that opened in 2011. And we didn't want to do this for ourselves. We wanted to do this for all the SKC fans out there. And it was just an absolutely fantastic feeling. It was, again, happiness. And honestly, afterwards, too, because I had a feeling that would be my last game, too. It's not very often I get emotions, but I feel the tears coming a little bit, like this year could be the last game.
I think one of the images that jumps to mind for a lot of Sporting Kansas City fans and probably a lot of MLS fans who just like the sport is you holding the trophy. You know, there was a lot of guys, a lot of heroes, but you holding that trophy, and we could see the emotion on your face.
Yeah, listen, I won a championship when I was 21 years old. I won my first championship. And I honestly thought that would be one of many. I did not realize in that early age how difficult it really is to win a championship. So I had to wait another 15 years to win a championship. One of two cup finals, but I had to wait 15 years. And as I said before, then I had that feeling that could have been my last game too. So incredible, proud moment and relief. It was, you don't feel it in the moment, but it was a stressful game too. You know, every little mistake in games like that will very often get punished, and you don't want to be that guy who makes a mistake.
And it's funny that I was there covering it for a wire service, and I remember, you know, how when the warm-ups were over, everybody ran back into the locker room, you know, and people were trying to figure out how to stay warm. When that game ended, you guys just stayed out on the field. It was like it was no longer 20 degrees or whatever it had dropped to. You guys were out on the field for a long time celebrating with the fans, and I don't think the cold bothered you at that point, did it?
I remember clearly that cold from the morning when I walked my dog, when I arrived to the stadium, when we warmed up, when we played the 90 minutes, when we played the other 30 minutes, it was ridiculous cold. When we went into the PKs and the after party afterwards on the field, I agree. I really didn't pay attention to the cold. I mean, I don't know what happened. Of course, the temperature didn't change, but there was just so many other things that you had to take in.
I want to talk about your opportunity. It didn't come, fortunately, I don't mean it that way. You didn't have to kick in the penalty kicks, but what would your approach have been? Do you have a strategy or a style or something that you can, now that you're retired, you can give away?
Yeah, well, it's not very often you're seeing a goalkeeper take a penalty, and I've taken one PK in my entire career. That was back in Denmark. I was the fifth shooter in a penalty shootout in a cup semifinal. And my strategy were always to chip the ball in the middle. And I succeeded back then. And to be honest, right now, I really haven't thought about that. I was the next shooter in that penalty shootout against Salt Lake.
Would you have been able to stop Nick Raimondo's attempt?
Well, every time I face a PK, I go in there with the belief that I'll stop it. So the answer to that would be yes, of course.
There you go. There you go. Why was RSL such a bitter rival for Sporting?
Well, we're two physical team who played hard, both teams. We had a friendly game, if you can call it that. It didn't turn out not being that friendly.
Yeah.
In a preseason game in Arizona, where it got a little bit heated. And apparently players and coaches and whoever witnessed that did not forget that afternoon in Arizona, and they brought that into the league. I remember when we played in Salt Lake too, it was tough. When we played Salt Lake at home in regular season, it was tough. And of course the playoff were insane.
And that rivalry, even though you haven't met, maybe Sporting and RSL has met in one of the earlier rounds, but haven't had a lot of postseason rivalry, but that rivalry is still, if RSL's coming to Kansas City, fans get upset. They're, you know, they can't wait to knock RSL out. It's not, I mean, who can be upset with people from Salt Lake City? I mean, it's just a fairly nice city, but Sporting fans can't.
I don't think it's anything to do with the city. I think it's an absolutely beautiful city and love spending time there, but it's just back then it was two very, very, very physical teams that had a lot of tough players in the roster, and no one held it back. Everyone went out there and gave everything they had. The styles of both teams have changed over the years, but I still see the rivalry is still there. It's not very often they go away, but you know, when I played in SKC, you know, Houston were also a big rival for us. We had some tough and intense games against Houston Dynamo. They knocked us out in a conference final or two. But the third time we played them, you know, that's what happening when you have that playoff system, you know. You see, in a period of time, it's very often the same teams in a few years, they'll face each other.
Sure.
And Houston and us and Salt Lake were just three very, 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 very good teams from our conference.
Yeah, and at that time, wasn't that the last year that Sporting was in the Eastern Conference, and that's how you played in the MLS Cup, and then Sporting and actually Houston moved to the Western Conference. It was either right after that or maybe a year following that.
I think you're right, but I don't remember exactly.
Okay. How long did you play in MLS?
4 years.
4 years.
I had 1 year with the Wizards and 3 years with Sporting KC.
Okay. Okay. So you were part of that changeover. We'll get back to how soccer has grown in Kansas City here in a second. But how has MLS changed from when you first started up through now? I mean, the MLS just finished its 25th season. How has that soccer changed?
A lot. It's a different league. I thought when I came here at the time, it was a very, very strong league. But MLS and all the individual teams have done a fantastic job. Just keep growing and growing and growing and getting better and better. The money is getting bigger, so you can get the younger and better players over from Europe. They're not just coming here to retire anymore. MLS is being taken seriously in Europe right now, and in South America as well. You can get some good players who wants to come to MLS to have a good lifestyle and play some very good, attractive soccer, and at the same time make some good money. MLS have absolutely developed in a fabulous way over the years, and it become a very, very attractive place for a lot of good players. And what I think the teams have done well with too now is the academies, how that's growing for the youth. And that's, of course, very, very important for the future. But almost every team has a very, very strong academy and taking it very seriously, spending a lot of money and getting good coaches into those academies. I think we can see here close in with SKC how many homegrown they're signing and young players popping up here and there. I think that's fantastic to see, you know, young kids going through your own system and all the way into the first team. That's almost a love story, but that makes me happy to see that.
Sure. Soccer has grown in Kansas City just exponentially, and it was growing obviously even to that point, but would you say that's the match that caused soccer to be right up there maybe with baseball and football in Kansas City?
Well, here's what I'll say. I came in 2010. We played Manchester United at Arrowhead. I think that was a game changer for soccer.
Mm-hmm.
I think 58,000 people at Arrowhead had an unbelievable experience. I think almost all 58,000 people in the stands at that game came to see that game with the mind that Manchester United would give us a lesson how to play soccer. I could feel during the game, and I've spoken with people who were at the game too and former teammates too. During that game, you could feel how the fans changed in the stands.
Huh.
They were like, we have a team. We can compete. And we can compete with the best in the world. And let's be honest, if we play Manchester United 10 times, we'll probably lose 9 and win 1. But we won that one game that was so important. I know it was a friendly, but we won that game. And I believe soccer changed a little bit that year. That's in 2010. 2011, we had the amazing opportunity to move into Sporting Park and open the new stadium. I think that was a massive game changer too. So we now had all the support. We had the fantastic stadium. People knew who we were. Now it's time to win titles. 2012, we're winning the US Open Cup at home in front of 22,000 people. Absolutely amazing night. 2013, we win the MLS Cup. And I think that was absolutely amazing 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, every year there was just something that played a part how soccer developed and were keep growing in Kansas City and in America.
Yeah.
But I'm more important in Kansas City. And I think that was an incredible time. Incredible time I had here on the field and off the field. My family absolutely loved it. I'll make a long story short. I quit my job in Hartford, Connecticut in October 2019 and asked them, when do they want to move? And everyone in the family said, we want to go back to Kansas City. And you got to remember, I gave them the opportunity. We could move anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Because we have the citizenship now, so we didn't have to worry about visa or anything. So we can come and go like we wanted to, but everyone wanted to go back to Kansas City. And that was including me. Been here during the corona time. Of course, that has been devastating with that damn virus. People losing jobs and businesses going down. But I don't want to sound too dramatically, but I couldn't find a better place that I wanted to be during this time here than Kansas City.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. You had quite a 4-year run, my friend. You start with beating Man U and finish with winning the cup and holding that up and riding off into the sunset. That's a pretty good 4-year run, isn't it?
It was. I was, listen, it was time of my life. I had an amazing time, not only on the field and with my teammates, but also off the field with friends and my kids. Absolutely loved it here. And still this day has a lot of friends here in Kansas City.
You talked about how that helped Kansas City, but it also helped soccer in America. Just that those things that happened in that 4-year stretch. Do you think the U.S. is getting closer just from a general perspective to competing on the national stage or international stage rather for like a World Cup?
Yeah, I think they do. I think what they're doing right now is, of course, a process with a lot of young players. But you see a lot of those young players are competing on a very high level in Europe. You see them in Premier League, in Bundesliga, and with some of the best teams in the world.
Right.
You have a massive talent pool here in America, too, and the players are playing now. You know, those young players, owners, general managers, coaches are not afraid to give the young players chances now, and they're really taking them. And I think there's a very, very bright future for the U.S. national team. I think there's a lot of talent, and it's a very, very young team that can grow into something special over the next few years.
That's really cool. Yeah, obviously, this is focused on Kansas City today. Kansas City prides itself, calls itself the soccer capital of America. Do you agree with that? And if so, why do you think that's the case?
No, I think Sporting Kansas City's ownership, I would say it's one of the best organizations I've ever been a part of. And when you hear stories about other teams and about other clubs and all that stuff, there's a great, great leadership, and it's a great, great organization. And players want to be here. Players want to be here. Even when careers are over, players want to stay here in Kansas City. You're getting treated well. You're having a heck of experience as a player. I think the fan base is absolutely amazing. I know Seattle Sounders have maybe 40,000 or 50,000 people when they play. Atlanta have 60,000 or 70,000 people when they're playing. But when Sporting Park is rocking, those 22,000 are so loud and can create an intensity that I haven't felt at any stadiums in America.
Did you thrive off that? I mean, you hear so many athletes in various sports say, once the game's going on, I don't hear the crowd. You personally, as a keeper, did you feed off that?
Of course you do. You have to. You know, it's motivating you. It's creating something inside you that you don't want to let those 22,000 people down who are standing here and cheering for you. They all want you to win. You don't want to see them leave that stadium disappointed. You want to see them leave with their heads up and hands over their head and keep singing when they're leaving the stadium.
Yeah, for sure. I want to ask you about the Sporting's current keeper, Tim Melia. First of all, just a general thought. What do you think of Tim?
I think he's been absolutely phenomenal. Fantastic goalkeeper. He's the very modern goalkeeper. Very good with his feet. I think he has very, very close to have the full package is what's asked for in the modern game right now. Absolutely fantastic person off the field as well. And I'm very, very happy he's having this he's having here in Kansas City. It's so well-deserved. I truly believe Sporting have one of the best keepers in the league right now.
Have you ever seen or been around a match like, I can't remember who they played. I should have had it written down, but they went to PKs and he stopped all three attempts. Have you ever seen that before?
That was the San Jose game. And I was there at the stadium watching it. And no, I have not seen that before. Absolutely incredible. Not surprised when you see his record on PKs. So of course he was a game winner. You know, if he was a striker, though, if you have to combine that, he would have scored a hat trick.
Well, you know, it's so funny because late in the game, I was covering the game, but I was watching it intently. I'm thinking, Sporting isn't trying to get on the front foot at all. They're not pushing forward. It's like they're, you know, I'm processing this in my mind. It's like they're playing for the PKs. Oh, wait a minute. That's why. we kind of went into it going, okay, if we get to PKs, game over.
Yeah, that's what you very, very often see when you go to those two times 15 minutes overtime. Yeah. You know, the stress and the fear of making that one mistake,
right,
is in the back of your head. So you don't want to be that guy, as I said earlier on with the Salt Lake game. So everything, for the most part, in those 30 minutes is getting played safe. You're not taking any chances, and especially not on your own half. Okay. And that's very often when you see those overtime, they'll go turn into PKs.
Yeah. But very, very seldom do home fans or the fans of one side feel so confident going into PKs as the Sporting fans do with Tim's propensity for being able to stop them.
That's true. And I honestly think that Sporting Kansas City fans are very, very lucky with the history of penalty shootouts Sporting Kansas City have been through over the 10 years I have followed and paid attention to Sporting, because that's not normal. It's very, very, very unusual. But oh my God, some drama there have been in those PKs. And thanks God, for the most part, it's been positive drama.
All right, I want to talk about after you retired. You said that you were 36 at the time of the MLS Cup in 2013. Why did you step away?
No, I think it was time for me. I was beaten up a little bit. I had, for some reason, since I came to America, I had meningitis three times. Never really gave myself time to recover from it. I remember I was at the hospital for 2 or 3 days, and I drove from the hospital straight out to the training ground and trained and played the games two days later. And second time I was up in Canada and I played, I knew I had it, but I played the game and went to the hospital Sunday when we got back from Canada and started struggling a lot with migraines and just my health were not in a good shape there. Yeah. And I had to look after myself a little bit. And when we won the MLS Cup, you know, you got that feeling, okay, that was it. Yeah. And great decision. Never regretted one second. Of course, in my opinion, being a soccer player is the best life in the world. But I went straight into coaching and thought I had the second best life I could ask for. And I went straight into coaching after stopping in SKC, went to Oklahoma, were there for 4 years. Then I took a year off. Then I went to Connecticut and coached in Hartford. And then I came back here right after I quit and not done anything since October 19. So now I'm on the hunt for a job again. Now it's time for me to get out there and do something again. I feel I'm too young and still have so much to give that I got to get out there.
Coaching, is that where you're looking?
Yeah.
Something in the sport.
Exactly.
Okay. Would you coach goalkeepers or coach soccer in general, or do you care?
I am open-minded. Of course, it's got to be an exciting project for me. I'm very, very open-minded. And if I get that feeling that it's the right thing, of course, I'm not going to hesitate.
What if Peter Vermees calls you up tomorrow and says, hey, Jimmy, you know, my keeper's coach is leaving. Would you take that position? How fast would you jump at that?
Listen, it would take me 2 minutes to get down to the car.
All right. And I always like to ask people just to talk about your family and you know, what you're enjoying about where you're living. In this case, it's my hometown as well. So just talk about your family.
Yeah. Well, I've been married for many years. I shouldn't know the numbers. 19 years.
Wow.
I have two kids, two girls, and they're 14 and 22. My 22-year-old, she never left Oklahoma when we moved to Hartford, Connecticut. And she stayed there and working down there. Youngest here with us, being homeschooled right now. And none of my kids really are into soccer. I think they had enough of mine. They've been, especially when we lived in Denmark, they got dragged around to every single stadium in the country, and they had enough. And none of them, but maybe the grandkids one day will do it. But no, listen, I have been very, very, very lucky with two amazing girls and a lovely wife who supports me in what I'm doing. I couldn't have done what I've done without their support.
All right. Well, Jimmy, it's been a pleasure to get to know you a little bit better and to chat with you. And thank you for joining our show today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Sports Connections with David Smail. Make sure to subscribe, follow, and rate the show from your favorite podcast platform. You can learn more about David Smail and his work by visiting davidsmailbooks.com. Don't forget to join us weekly for new episodes. Until next time.